This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Subban will catapult it down inside the Winnipeg, and they score.
Wow.
A well of strength by Blake Coleman, and one-handed it to the top corner. It's 4-0 New Jersey. Kulikov winds up, slap shot, he scores! Winnipeg is on the board with 10 seconds remaining in this second period. Pionk, wrist shot toward the net, stop, rebound, Roslovic scores! A big fat rebound off a point shot, and it's 4-2. Put it back on it, front and a shot, they score! Matthew Perreault came off the bench, looked through the weeds, wasted no time. It's three straight goals for the Jets, and they're within one. Pionk rolls off the boards, gets to the high slot. Pionk, wrist shot, scores! Neil Pionk will tie it at four. How about that? Centered on in front of shot. We're banging away at it. Wheeler had two chances. He hit the post. The captain over the line. He slows down, moves in to the deep backhand shot. He scores! Blake Wheeler wins it.
Well, it certainly wasn't boring. That's what I can say without a doubt. Last night's Jets-Devils game, the Jets coming back from that 4-0 deficit, scoring four unanswered goals, and then Blake Wheeler with the chin strap removing game-winning goal in the shootout, giving the Jets a 5-4 victory. The Jets are not boring. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning via the iHeartRadio app and at TSN1290.ca, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Alongside Dave Minuka and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We're with you for the next 3 hours. We're all over the Winnipeg Jets on this Saturday morning. You can reach us here in studio via Twitter. Send your tweets to @IllegalCurve. You can also reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. Gentlemen, good to see you on this Saturday morning. Two games for the Jets. They've given up 10 goals. They're 1-1. And I tweeted this really, I think, after the first period on Thursday against the Rangers, that whatever you can say about the Winnipeg Jets this season, they're not going to play boring hockey.
Yeah. And you mentioned the Jets have given up 10, but, you know, 17 goals, like minus the empty netter that was scored by the Rangers in the first game. But, you know, offensive hockey, you got to love it in the first couple of games of the season, right? And you're absolutely right, Drew. It hasn't been boring. And, you know, just going back, I know we want to talk about last night's game because that was a great game for the Jets especially. But going back to that first game, and the Jets could have easily won that game. And I realize, you know, a lot of the talk surrounded Connor Hellebuck and maybe, you know, the play of some defensemen. You know, there were some miscues in front of him and all of that. And, you know, Mark Stahl's wraparound goal was, you know, obviously the first goal. But that was a goal that was, you know, talked about on this station all day. And obviously you can't let that one in. But, you know, I thought, you know, what was kind of lost in that first game, Dave, was how well the Jets played offensively. And I didn't think they were actually that bad defensively. And sure, you know, if Hellebuck makes a couple of stops, they probably end up winning that game, right? Not just because it was a one goal game, but, you know, it could have changed the outlook of the game. But you look at the top line, Scheifele, Wheeler, Ehlers. I mean, we know how good they were in the first game, and I thought they were pretty good as well yesterday, especially I thought Scheifele was really good, and, you know, maybe Ehlers you'd put second. Maybe Wheeler wasn't as good against the Devils as he was against the Rangers, but, you know, you could have easily had 4 points here, guys. And I realized the first period last night against the Devils was pretty bad, right? You go back, you know, 4 shots. They had a couple of power plays, and they really didn't look dangerous on those power plays. So you're watching that game, and Blake Coleman scores early in the second. You're thinking, okay, here we go again. You kind of got the feeling last night, you know, that the Devils were going to go up 3 goals, 4 goals. And then Dmitry Kulikov, who obviously was burned on Coleman's second goal, one of the nicest goals we've seen maybe in the last, I don't know, 5 years. And
one-handed falling down, you're gonna get some highlights on that one.
And I told you before the show, Drew, I mean, that was Ovechkin-esque. I mean, to be able to do that, and I realize, you know, Kulikov gets burned there, but I just thought it was really nice that Kulikov gets the Jets' first goal, and he gave them some life after he was burned by Coleman. So, you know, in the NHL, we know crazy things happen all the time. I mean, you could be down 3 goals, 4 goals, and you can tie it up. You go back to Vegas versus San Jose, right? In the second round of the playoffs. We know the madness that took place in the third period there with LeBanc getting all those power play goals. So, I mean, just a really gutsy effort by the Jets, because it looked like going into that third period, there was no chance they were going to get 2 points, let alone one.
Well, credit to Dave Minuk over here, as Dave, you did tweet after the Kulikov goal, and just as the second period was winding down and it was 4-1, you said, you know, basically to paraphrase you, Dave, that with this Jets team and with the firepower that they have, they're never really out of a game. Now, you got a fair bit of criticism for that comment. I think people thought you might have been hitting the bottle a little bit earlier on a Friday evening. But, you know, lo and behold, obviously, they come back with the four unanswered, four goals, and I think it was a 12.5-minute span from the end of the second period through the tying goal in the third period. And, I mean, truthfully, Blake Wheeler probably scores in regulation, what, 99 out of 100 times in that instance when he hits two posts?
Yeah.
So the Jets probably get a regulation victory there. But, you know, they kept fighting, they kept scratching, they kept crawling back, and they did. And, you know, it's a character win. I know it's only the second game of the year, and this is a team that's clearly got a number of warts, especially on the back end. And right now there's probably some questions about the goaltending, especially after Connor Hellebuck's first game. But this is a team that is got offensive of firepower, like we knew that was going to be probably the envy of a lot of teams in the NHL.
Well, and I think the key also is the fact that it was a victory that everybody had a piece of. You got Jack Roslovic contributing, you have Matthew Perreault contributing, you have Neil Pionk contributing. So that to me is the bigger statement about the game. I mean, I think, again, and that was kind of the point of my tweet at the end of the second period, was simply the fact that with his Jets team, scoring isn't going to be an issue. It's not that, and that's no really insightful piece of information, because most people know that this Jets team has the firepower to score quite consistently throughout the lineup. It's a function of the defense. Are they going to be able to be tight enough defensively as a collective group to really help their goaltenders out? And that to me is going to be the key. And again, you know, Coach Maurice was asked about it after the game, and really we generally, and you know, we've watched the NHL, so we know this, but like really up until November, you know, maybe you're not expecting to have 5, 6, 7 goal games, but really that's kind of the norm, especially in those first 2 months, just a little bit more of this fire wagon hockey where it's a little bit more loose, a little bit more open. And then really you see a tightening. So again, can I see the Jets as a collective group starting to get to know each other a little bit, especially on the back end with so many new faces? I think that's kind of what we're probably going to see over the next course of the next 2 months. And then again, the most important part is picking up those points, but also tightening up defensively.
Yeah, and you mentioned the new faces, and I think there is something to be said for the second game of a back-to-back, five new faces in the lineup, right? Because you got to throw in Anthony Betetto, right? You got to throw in Gabriel Bork. You got to throw in Mark Letestu. I mean, these are new faces. These are their first two games, regular season games, obviously. I'm not talking preseason, because they obviously played in the preseason, but I think there's something to be said for an early win. You go back, guys, 2 years, right? And the Jets lost those first two games of the year. We talked about that a lot a couple of years back.
You're talking about the home loss to Toronto, and then, Calgary, then the road loss in Calgary.
And then I think it was Edmonton that they beat in that
Nikolai
third game.
Ehlers had the hat trick.
First away hat trick, I think.
It was Thanksgiving Monday.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that ended up, and this isn't just coming from us. I mean, the players admitted that third game of the season back during the 2017-18 season, they kind of looked at that as a turning point. And we know how important wins are early in the season. And let's be honest, the Jets don't have an easy schedule to start off. I mean, when you start off on the road like this, and sure, they don't play a lot of Central Division games. I mean, Dennis has referenced it a lot on the broadcast.
Division games in the first 17 of the season.
Right, that's right. And so, I mean, you're playing a lot of Eastern teams, you're playing Pacific teams. It's not an easy schedule. And you could look and go up and down the teams, and there are teams that have harder schedules, but, it's just something worth pointing out. So I think getting the 2 points in the fashion that they got the 2 points, right? You're down four goals, you scratch and claw your way back, and that's what I thought about that third period, Drew. I really thought that the goals were workmanlike goals. I mean, Mark Scheifele did really good work on both Jets goals in the third period. And when you're looking at, Neil Pionk, getting that shot on net, the Jack Roslovic goal, that was the second Jets goal. Mm-hmm. Pionk just puts it on net, and sure, Corey Schneider gives up the big rebound, but, Pionk, I thought, had a really strong game. And you look at Josh Morrissey, he led all players. Who was second amongst all players? Neil Pionk. Neil Pionk played 27 minutes yesterday. I mean, just over 27 minutes. So I thought he was really strong. And again, I realize, there are a lot of Jets fans that still look at Pionk and compare him to Jacob Trouba, and they look at his numbers and all that. And I realize you could make an argument that Pionk is maybe a third pairing defenseman, but right now, based on injuries, you know, based on Dustin Byfuglien not being in the lineup. I mean, Pionk is in the top four, and I thought he was pretty good yesterday.
He was good. I mean, we know that his game, the specialty in his game is offensively, mm-hmm. and he was good offensively
it's
last
when you
night.
Watch it.
Yes, he jumps up into the rush. There was a play, I think, in the third period. Obviously, they were pressing for the tying goal, but Pionk was behind the Devils' goal, the Devils' net. I mean, mm-hmm. and you don't typically, in quotes, see a defenseman down there, but that's his game, is jump up into the play, lead the rush, get it out of your own zone. He's not very good, not very adept in, you know, preventing zone entries and things of that nature, and that's the knock on him. And, you know, this is the Jets team that's going to be right now, at least until roster changes happen. If Dustin Byfuglien comes back, if the Jets use that salary cap space to acquire a defenseman, something that I think they'll need to do, because you can't keep doing this night in, night out realistically, they're going to give up a lot, and then they're going to score a lot because they have that ability to push the play and push the pace. And when you're never out of a game that way, good or bad, because you can't probably shut down a game very well either, it's, you know, just the nature of the team right now. It's the makeup of the roster right now. You know, I thought Patrick Laine last night, mm-hmm. you know, the Matthew Perreault goal, I mean, that's based on a forecheck, a hard forecheck by Andrew Kopp, a hard forecheck by Patrick Laine. He keeps the puck in. He's moving his feet. He hasn't scored yet, but he's got a couple assists, and I think he's been more noticeable. And I saw glimpses of him as a power forward last night, where he would really impose his will on the defense and on the opposition. So as many bad things as there were last night, and there have been the last couple games, especially on the defensive side, going 1-1, especially when you're down 4-0 late in the second period, is not such a bad position to be in, and it's a big character win for the Jets last night.
And Lauren Brossoit was talking about it after the game with Dennis when they were doing their post-game interview, and he said, you know, we could have been 0-2 very easily, and that's not a way we wanted to start our season. Mm-hmm. So being able to come back and you know, and the other thing that Blake Wheeler said, and I think the coach said it as well, was the idea that the bench was still very engaged, very active. They didn't have their heads hanging low in that second period down 4-0. And then they get the Kulikov goal, and that's the energy they need to really kind of get them into that third period, knowing, hey, we're down by 3. And again, it's the NHL. When you have this firepower that the Jets have, mm-hmm. and you're rolling those guys out, I mean, then
You're playing a New Jersey Devils team that isn't, you know, a defensive stalwart.
Sure,
either.
Of course. I know. I look, and the reality,
they're a lot better though, Drew, than they were last year. I mean,
well, sure, they got PK Subban back there now, so you're gonna be by default a better team on the back end than you were.
Sure, and I'm not talking about just on the back end. I mean, you're talking about just having Jack Hughes, mm-hmm. Nikita Gusev, I mean, Wayne Simmons.
A healthy Taylor Hall.
Exactly. Yeah. A healthy Taylor Hall, as you mentioned. I mean, you're talking about the Hart Trophy winner from a couple of years back. So just overall, it's a better team. And I still have major question marks about the goaltending. Corey Schneider, to me, is a guy that right now just, he can't play 50 games a year in the NHL anymore. And he did really well last night. And you know, if you've listened to the show, you know I'm a big Corey Schneider fan going back to the Moose days, but injuries unfortunately have caught up. So all I'm saying is Schneider's obviously an NHL goalie. I'm just saying Mackenzie Blackwood, you might need 35, 40 mm. games out of him, and Mackenzie Blackwood's never played that much in the NHL. He's a young goalie, right? So that's my biggest question mark with the Devils. Yeah, we talk about, you know, the right side with PK Subban, Sammy Vatanen, who got the goal yesterday, mm-hmm. Damon Severson. I mean, they've got a good Will Butcher on the left side is a good defenseman that I like. So they're better than they were last year. As you mentioned, Drew, just getting Subban makes you better. But I think the big question mark is in goal. And the other thing I wanted to mention, and we're probably going to get into this with Weber in about, you know, 16 or 17 minutes, whenever he's coming on. I mean, Jack Roslovic, to me, up the middle. I mean, that was a big switch from the first game. He was on the wing the first game. Yesterday, he was playing in the middle. And, you know, we've talked about it. I mean, we know that Jack Roslovic can be very effective at that center position, Dave. You've watched him many times, mm-hmm. and that's his natural position, even though, you know, he's played wing the majority of his time with the Jets. You got to think that Maurice is going to stick with Roslovic at center the way he played last night.
Well, we're going to talk about the forward lines and the defensive pairings next segment, so there's certainly a lot to talk about in terms of the roster construct of the Jets right now. But you know, you look at that game, and you know, after the game, it's an off day for the Jets today. No media availability, no skating. It was scheduled that way. You play back-to-back, you always get the next day off. And the Jets had a team dinner scheduled for last night after the game. I mean, that team dinner is a lot more, it tastes a lot better, and is a lot more of a party. Yeah. After coming back from being down 4 goals, than it is, you know, if you end up, you know, falling one goal short, or if you end up giving up that lead, or if you end up losing in overtime or a shootout, that 5-4 victory last night will taste a lot better for this team. And a lot of teams say they prefer to start on the road because that's how you bond with your teammates. That's how you sort of get to know guys that you don't know, as to your point about there being five new guys in the lineup. This Jets team, real character victory last night, Dave.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I think it's a function of now they get an opportunity to be able to relax with their teammates and get to know these guys on the road. You don't have the distractions of kids and family and whatnot. You're as a collective group, and I'm not suggesting that they're walking around en masse around New York City, but the idea is they'll be together and they'll get to know each other a little bit better. And yeah, I think, true to your point, I think it's well made. I think it's a function of being able to build that group character that a team that has so many question marks around it needs. And you know, other thing worth noting is that Sami Niku was looking really good. The Moose played last night, yeah. Fell short, but still, one more thing for Jets fans to be a little bit more excited about is Sami Niku was very good in his Moose game last night.
We'll talk about the Moose later on in the show as well, but you mentioned Niku, and I would not be surprised if we see Sami Niku certainly next Thursday for the home opener, mm-hmm. but I wouldn't even be surprised if we see him Tuesday in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, the Moose play tonight against Texas, and then they don't play again until next week for their home opener here in Winnipeg.
Right.
But I agree with you, I could see Sami being called up soon.
Exactly right. When we come back, we talk about the forward lines, we talk about some of the D pairings, we talk about Kyle Connor's contract extension, much more to come about your Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
That's a pretty exciting line. I've had some good chemistry with Patty a couple times last year. We had a couple explosive nights, so that's gonna be fun to try to get that chemistry. And then Copper is he's such a good pro and such a good player. It'll be fun to see what we can do.
That's Kyle Connor talking about his line mates, his current line mates, at least Andrew Kopp and Patrick Laine.
It's not Kyle Connor. It's the $50 million man.
Was that really necessary to interrupt me to say that? I think everybody knew how much he was getting. 7 years, $50 million, $7.14 million per season. That's a salary cap hit for Kyle Connor. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the entire family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So let's talk, both about the Kyle Connor contract extension and the Jets' forward lines and defensive pairings so far through the first two games. Connor's contract, I think, pretty standard, pretty much exactly what everyone expected, just a matter of how long it was going to take to get it done. He gets 7 years. The Jets are happy. He gets $50 million. He's happy. I think everybody sort of wins in this deal. It's just a matter of that it took until the start of the season.
I think we were all looking at that and thought to ourselves, isn't that what everybody thought it was going to be anyways?
Yeah, why did we wait this long?
Yeah,
for
like what took so long for that to transpire?
Because I think it was
Connor
just
he gets the missed training camp. That's a nice feature.
I think it was just the extra year, right? I think all along we knew it was going to be minimum five, right? Yeah. We can all agree on that. So yeah. I think the only surprise, and Pierre LeBrun talked about it on the afternoon ride, right? I think everyone, all hockey observers, were surprised by that extra year, and that came from Kyle Connor's camp, right? Mm. And you look at the AAV, and you're right, Dave. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. Kyle Connor is an elite goal scorer. His best years are to come, right?
Yep.
I think you can, what is his ceiling? Like 40 goals, 90 points? Like maybe that's a little bit high, but I don't think it's that high.
That seems
like 40 goals, 85 points?
I mean, think the 40 goals is more plausible than the 90 points, but I mean, I think, you'll gladly pay $7 million for a guy who's going to score between 30 and 40 for the next 7 years.
90 might be high, but I don't think 75 to 80 is.
Yeah, maybe that might not be high. I think 90 is probably, but 75 to 80, right. Sure, if he gets a little bit more playmaking ability. But
he's making, $7 million a year. That's what, or just over $7 million
a
year.
If you score 30 some odd goals in the NHL on a year in and year out basis. It's pretty straightforward. I don't think anybody really blinked an eye at all about that contract. Let's get into the forward line. So obviously this is Winnipeg Jets team is without Brian Little, who we know would certainly take up one of the 12 forward spots if he was healthy, and he's skating, so we don't know when his return is, but hopefully it'd be sooner rather than later for the Winnipeg Jets centerman. When he comes back, based on the lineup last night of Scheifele, Kopp, Lowry, and Roslovic, is Brian Little come back as a centerman, or does he come back as a winger?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And, you know, we've only seen that a little bit since the Jets came back. You know, this is year nine, mm-hmm. which is really incredible. I was actually thinking, I don't know if you were thinking about this, Drew, but, you know, watching the Jets go from MSG to Newark to Long Island.
Yeah.
I couldn't help but think of your bachelor party in 2011. We were lucky enough to go see the Jets in all three of those cities. And, well, I guess, I mean, New York is one city, but what
all I'm talking three of those about venues.
Three venues. Yes. And I mean, what an incredible, I actually think the Jets beat the Devils, lost to the Rangers, and then beat the Islanders, if I'm not mistaken.
You're mistaken. They beat the Islanders on a Thursday night, then on the
but they lost to the Rangers.
Rangers. On yeah. the Saturday, they were down 2-0 to the Devils.
Yeah.
They came back with two goals in the third period and then lost in overtime, but they got the point.
Right.
And then on the Sunday in Madison Square Garden, they lost.
Anyways,
close. You got it close.
I mean, I was just thinking how crazy it is that this is year nine and that bachelor party was 8 years ago. But anyways, I digress. You know, when you're talking about these forward lines, I mean, we talked about it prior to the season, and, you know, that was the big question mark, right? Was Jets head coach Paul Maurice going to break up Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler? Obviously, he hasn't, right? But the big change is that Nikolaj Ehlers and Kyle Connor have flip-flopped, and then you've got Andrew Kopp in the middle there because Brian Little's out of the lineup. So to get back to your question, though, Drew, I mean, I think there is a chance that you're going to see Brian Little on the wing. I have no idea. I mean, I can't get inside Paul Maurice's head, but I mean, we've talked about Andrew Kopp a lot. I mean, I think there's untapped offensive potential. Andrew Kopp has always been a winger on that third line, whether it was the TLC line or another line, Dave. And, mm-hmm. you know, you look at Andrew Kopp's metrics. I mean, he's got good possession numbers, a very good defensive player, and he's got some offensive upside. I don't think anybody is going to mistake Andrew Kopp for a 30 to 35 goal scorer.
Right.
But I don't think anybody in this room would be surprised if he scores 15 to 20 goals. So my point is, if Andrew Kopp between Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor is working, which it has the first two games, mm-hmm. and then when Brian Little comes back, I mean, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, right? So I think
the top six, I don't think there's anybody advocating for any changes to the top six, that being Ehlers, Scheifele, and Wheeler, and then Connor, Kopp, and Laine. Right now, these two games, of course, and so a small sample size, mm-hmm. that's working fine. I think it's that third line, which I'm going to call the Bork, Lowry, and Letestu line. I think most people would say, you know, Needs Mark Letestu.
Well, you're not moving Lowry to wing.
No, of course not.
So, I mean, you're basically plopping in Brian Little, and that means that either Letestu or Jack Roslovic is not playing center. I think that's what we're talking about.
Well, I think Letestu at this point in time, when Little's healthy, from my perspective, if they were asking me, Letestu is going up to the press box as your 13th guy.
Right.
And you can go with Bork, Lowry, and Little being a winger there.
It's between Bork and Letestu.
Yeah.
But because Letestu is a center, I agree with you. Letestu is probably the number one candidate.
I mean, Mark Letestu's had a tremendous NHL career, and all the praise to him for that career, but he can't keep up out there anymore. And I know he brings a veteran element, and I know he brings the veteran guile to the team, but, you know, you watch him out there and he's just not effective anymore. He's not impactful. And, you know, I'd much rather, I mean, you can't put Roslovic or Appleton up in the press box, guys who still have untapped potential, at the expense of Mark Letestu. I mean, doing so would just be absolutely crazy. Letestu, if he spends the entire season as your 13th forward, you know, 13th, and Gustafsson, you know, whatever happens with him as well, you know, terrific. And if Gustafsson comes into the lineup for Bork on some games as well, terrific. But I mean, you know what Bork and you know what Letestu bring to the table, and I think Bork brings a little bit more, but I also know that you can't put those guys in the lineup ahead of the Appletons and the Roslovics at this stage in their career. Dave,
I want to get Dave in here, but I'll say this much. I do have a hesitation with keeping David Gustafsson up as a 13th forward. I agree with what you were saying. I would probably keep Bork in the lineup over Letestu, but I don't like the idea of having, you know, a young prospect as your 13th forward. Like, to me,
I think Gustafsson is a, you know, not yet, but at some point in time, he's probably earmarked to go to the Moose or to go back to Sweden.
Well, and that's what I was getting at. Yeah. I think you want Gustafsson playing, and we can talk to Ken Wiebe about that, but I know that you don't want to fixate on that, Drew. You were more focused on, you know, Little comes back, then Letestu's the 13th forward. I just, David Gustafsson is a guy, I mean, he's 20 years old. Yeah, he needs to play. I don't want to see him, you know, just practicing and spending the majority of the season in that kind of Marco Dano spot.
Certainly not. I'm not advocating for him to spend, you know, the entire season in the press box, but I also don't think it'll hurt his development if he spends 3 weeks or a month in and around the Winnipeg right. Jets and the NHL level. I don't think that's a bad thing.
I don't know. I don't agree. I think he's
you think
gotta,
that's
I,
too long?
I think he's got to play games. I think if you're not planning on using him, then you got to send him back to Sweden and let him play games.
Right, but for a couple weeks, I don't think it hurts.
I mean, look, you know, a couple weeks, get him around the guys, that's fine, because the whole point is you want him to build up a little bit of a camaraderie with, this, with the, his eventual teammates. Sure, but not long. Like, I do not think, I would not advocate for very long with that, because, I mean, to me, again, you could probably get more out of him anyways than some of these guys. If, you know, if you want, I would throw Gustafsson anyways right now into the lineup. Why not? You've seen what you can get with him.
Sure.
And you see what you get with either Bork or Letestu. So why not? To me, it's a no-brainer.
You're right. I mean, I don't think there's a downside to letting him play you know, against the Islanders on Sunday at the expense of one of Bork or Letestu. Right. I mean, yeah, give him a taste, give him his first NHL action. I mean, it'll be a thrill for him. Let him have his first NHL game. I don't think there's any reason to not do that at this stage in the season.
I would be shocked if he plays one of those games. I mean, we don't know.
Wouldn't be shocked? Is that what you said?
No, I wouldn't be shocked.
No, I wouldn't be shocked either, but it has to be.
Because I don't think he's going to be with the Jets for he's not going to play the majority of the season with the Jets. Like, I would be shocked if we're sitting here in November and David Gustafsson is still with the Jets.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you, but it can't be. What I'm stressing is, and I mean, obviously I say this, but, you know, I'm not the decision maker, but we've seen enough of the, I think, Mark Letestu and Gabriel Bork on the ice together, you know, in the same lineup, barring injury right now, to say that it's time to, you know, give the Gustafsson a chance. Give when Brian Little comes back, it can't be at the expense of one of the young players, things of that nature.
You know, the good news is that you're getting an opportunity to see Jack Roslovic at center, which, mm-hmm. as he says, you know, I saw him do that with the Moose quite consistently. And Jack Roslovic's an extraordinarily, you know, smart player. You know, he's a really good passer. So to me, giving him that opportunity in the middle, up the middle, is kind of a side benefit to the unfortunate Little injury. That, you know, Jack Roslovic's getting this opportunity, and we talk about this opportunity, and putting Matthew Perreault on that line, such a smart player.
Yep. Usually makes his line mates better.
He always, generally makes his line mates better. So to get Matthew Perreault in with two younger guys, add that veteran presence to a younger line, I think it gives this Jets a little more balance, and that's what we talked about it with Sean Tierney during the summer, that idea of rolling lines, you know, having depth throughout the lineup. And that's why I think you need to change that third line or whatever we're calling it now, because, you know, you put Little back and then maybe you put Gustafsson on it, and that just gives you a little more danger versus like just treading water. I mean, Adam Lowry, you know, you've got to be sitting there going, okay, this is not exactly what I signed up for.
Well, he's used to cycling the opposition to death, which is what he did as part of the TLC line. And I mean, Lowry between Bork and Letestu is a little bit of a wasted Adam Lowry right now. You need him with players who can keep up. You need him with players who can, you know, do what Adam Lowry does, which is forecheck and cycle and everything else. When we come back, Ken Wiebe of the Athletic, pardon me, joins us from New York. Talk more about the Jets, talk more about last night's victory, talk more about the forward and defensive pairings going forward. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are For the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number one, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio, 1290. Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, where we have posed our Illegal Curve question of the day. After two games, what lineup changes would you make to the Winnipeg Jets lineup? Send us your tweets at Illegal Curve. Send us your text, 129090. What lineup changes would you make to the Jets lineup after the first two games of the season?
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We head out to New York City, where our buddy Ken Wiebe is covering the Jets road trip for The Athletic. Ken, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are the Curves today?
The Curves are doing well. How is the Wiebe doing today?
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, beautiful day here in New York City.
That's good. Glad to hear it. Ken, obviously last night it was a stirring Winnipeg Jets comeback, being down 4-0 late in the second period. You know, we were talking about it in the first segment of the program, saying, you know, it's only game two, but it's a character win for the team, a team that has, you know, had a sort of an off-season of upheaval, an off-season of roster changes. Going back to last year when there was supposedly some, upheaval in the dressing room, allegedly. Do you think that's, you know, putting too much hyperbole on last night's victory, or do you think there is something to be said for a victory of that nature, even this early in the season?
For sure. I mean, obviously it's game two, and as I wrote, I mean, you can't call it a signature win because we don't know what's going to follow afterward for the Winnipeg Jets, but it is the type of victory that you sort of stow away in the memory bank for situations where a team is maybe down a goal or two. I mean, obviously the playbook does not call for falling behind four goals, and that's not going to lead to any success, but the fact that the Jets didn't kind of roll over in the third period and, you know, listfully lose that game, 6-1, does say something about where their team is at. And it's no surprise. I mean, after the early exit last year and all the expectations, this is a team that has a lot to prove, not necessarily to fans or whatever, but to themselves. I mean, they're a team that had a heartbreaking defeat in the first round, and they're determined to show that this new group is capable of, A, making the playoffs, and B, kind of going from there and seeing what happens. But that was an impressive rally. I mean, there's no doubt about it. It did not look like the Jets were going to be in any position to come back yesterday through 40 minutes. But lo and behold, a harmless and innocent-looking shot from Dmitry Kulikov ends his personal 71-game drought, and the Jets found a way to rally in the third after, I mean, maybe some unlikely circumstances. That fourth line only had three shifts in the second period, yet they got the goal, the second goal that kind of sparked the team. And then Matthew Perreault, who hasn't played a whole lot in the first two games, found a way to convert a pass from Andrew Kopp after a really good forecheck by both Patrick Laine and Andrew Kopp.
Ken, we have to ask you about Neil Pionk, because obviously there were a lot of eyes on Pionk in the first game, making his return to New York. Obviously a lot of eyes on Jacob Trouba as well. But you know, Neil Pionk picks up an assist on Jack Roslovic's goal, puts it on net, and obviously a fortuitous rebound goes right to Roslovic. And, you know, obviously he scores the game-tying goal. But, you know, he ends up playing, you know, just over 27 minutes, second only to Josh Morrissey. And he obviously had a really strong game last night.
Yeah, he sure did. As obviously, for sure, the lights were shining brightly on Pionk, and you knew it would be that way, especially after Trouba has a goal and two assists in the opener for both teams against his former team. You know, he was probably eager and anxious to get that game underway, playing in the building where he got his start and all those things. But I really like the way that Pionk has played in the first two games. I mean, obviously, Ville Heinola has had something to do with that, but I mean, there's also a huge responsibility for a young veteran, let's say, in Pionk. He's been around the league, and he's not young in age, but in terms of experience, he's still kind of rolling along as well. But I really like that pairing as a whole, and Pionk has more than handled himself capably. I mean, the one thing about him that we're learning, similar to Jacob Trouba, one of the similarities is that they both find a way to get their shot through, and his patience and ability to find the seam on that game-winning goal, or sorry, the game-tying goal, was another good example of patience. I mean, they had that defense pairing of Severson and Mueller hemmed in the zone basically for 2 minutes and 18 seconds, but you have to find the right time to get the shot off, and he found some traffic and found a hole, and at that point, the tables had really turned and the momentum had shifted, and, you know, in a lot of ways, it was surprising the Jets didn't find a way to win it in regulation based on how they had the Devils on their heels, and obviously Wheeler hitting the post twice in the last 5 seconds as well. So, yeah, Pionk has been full value on that, I mean, call it a second pairing if you like, but, I mean, Pionk is playing first-line minutes, or first-pairing minutes, and they're doing a very good job as a group together.
You know, Kenny, on Tuesday you had an article out on The Athletic about the Finland summit between Paul Maurice and Patrick Laine. And Patrick Laine, he talked the talk in his press conference, but he appears to be walking the walk in his first couple of games. What have your impressions been early this season about Patrick Laine?
Yeah, I think Laine's been awesome, guys. I really like the way that he's played. And sure, I mean, if you didn't watch either one of the games and you're just looking at the game sheets and you're saying, oh, well, you know, Laine, you know, two games without a goal, you know, what gives? But I really like the way that he's played. He's got a couple of assists. And more importantly than the points, guys, is the determination in which he's playing. He's been involved in the forecheck. He's been active. I mean, as I mentioned, I mean, he helps force the turnover behind the net. You know, Kopp obviously starts the forecheck in the one corner, but Laine, his ability to get on the defenseman on the other side, that allowed the puck to get right to Kopp. So I love the way that he's played. I love the way that he's skating. I think one of the biggest things we noticed from the press conference, and even back when Chris Johnson talked to Patrick in Finland, Patrick is in the best shape of his life. I mean, it's obvious. He's moving around better. He's in better shape. He's been on the ice more in each of the last two summers after, shifting his training. I think he's determined to have a huge year. And I mean, I did also pick him to win the Rocket Richard Trophy, and he's getting lots of good looks. It just, I think it's a matter of time before they start going in. But I love the way that he's played. And I think one of the bigger question marks going into the year was who's going to be that second line center. And we're starting to see some chemistry build between Andrew Kopp and Patrick Laine, and I think it's something that the Jets should stick with here for the foreseeable future.
Ken Wiebe of The Athletic is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Ken, obviously it's only been one game, but coming off of a worse season last year than the year before and coming off an average at best preseason, what's your level of concern, if any, with Connor Hellebuyck?
Yeah, obviously he did not play well in the opener. I mean, that was plain for all to see. I do agree with him to a degree that there were a couple of, maybe interesting bounces. I mean, obviously the Zibanejad shot that goes off his mask. I mean, how often out of 100 times does that puck lay flat on the stick of Artemi Panarin? Not many, but I didn't think that he tracked the puck overly well in the preseason. And I mean, that was also a factor in the opener. He did get over on the breakaway with Zibanejad, but Zibanejad still found a way to get it over the pad. Pelba calling it a Plinko kind of goal, but I mean, the read was there, but I mean, the legs are too far open on the wraparound for Stahl. Didn't like that goal. And overall, he's just got to play better. I mean, he knows it. I know that we made a lot in the media out of his commentary and him liking his game. I mean, it's not a surprise that he's saying that he likes his game, because if the goalie doesn't have confidence in himself, he's going to be getting shelled. But I do think that Connor needs, I think he needed to, he did say it's unacceptable giving up five, but I think that if there was a light level, as I mentioned on the telecast last night, if there's a little bit more ownership and him saying, you know what, I liked a lot about my game, but I have to be better, or, those kind of things would go a long way for Connor Hellebuyck. But in terms of hysteria and goaltending controversy, I don't think it's certainly at that point yet, but Connor needs to play better because he has a guy behind him that's pushing him. I mean, Brassois gave up four yesterday, but much like Henrik Lundqvist the night before, after giving up the fourth one, Brassois put up a brick wall and didn't allow the next one, which was, ultimately allowed the Jets to rally. So it'll be interesting. I mean, I thought after two periods it was pretty clear that Hellebuyck should be getting the start on Sunday, but, I mean, now I would think that there's at least a level of question mark when it comes to that who gets the call between the pipes. I think it will be Hellebuyck, but I wouldn't doubt at all if we saw a split for these next two road games to wrap up the trip.
Kenny, sticking with those next two games, do you think there's a chance that we see David Gustafson either tomorrow against the Islanders or the next game against the Penguins? And is your expectation that eventually David Gustafson will go back to Sweden and play in the Swedish Pro League, either once Brian Little comes back into the lineup or after other roster moves are made?
Yeah, I'd be happy to answer the poll question. I do think that Gustafson will get a game in these next two here. I liked a lot about his preseason, and if I'm Paul Maurice and I'm looking at the optimal lineup, if you will, I think David Gustafson played well enough to be in that opening day lineup, but I understand the Paul Maurice is sort of typically at times gone with the veteran player in that situation. That's what he did in the first two, so. I do think Gustafson will get a game in the next two. Jets aren't skating today, so I don't know if it will be Sunday. But I think we're going to see him in Pittsburgh probably, and Carl Dahlstrom could fit into that category as well. I think Gustafson ultimately does go back to Sweden, not because he's not necessarily ready, but maybe the timing just isn't quite right for him. And I think the biggest thing for people to remember is that even though he is ready to be an NHLer this year, at least right now in terms of his maturity in his game, I think you can't overlook the long-term benefits of a guy like Gustafsson, who's already a conscientious two-way player, but you don't want to see his offensive game get stagnant playing in that fourth line role where you're only getting that 6 to 8 minutes a night as a 19-year-old player. So for me, I think long-term development-wise, I think he should go back to Sweden, have a massive role on the World Junior team. In speaking with his coach, Thomas Monten, for the World Junior, he's probably going to be at least one of the alternate captains, if not the captain of Team Sweden. They've got a good team again. And I think that with his club team in Sweden, he'll be playing a top-six role, getting a lot of minutes. And for a guy like him, who's going to be a checker, but a guy that could also give you some offense at the NHL level, I think at 19 it's more important for him to be playing a lot rather than to be playing a little, even though he has showcased that maturity in his game that would probably allow him to be a smart penalty killer and be a fourth-line player at this level already.
Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. Our guest is Ken Wiebe of The Athletic. He joins us from New York, where the Jets will wrap up their New York portion of their road trip tomorrow evening against the Islanders.
You know, Kenny, Coach Maurice announced and said that the Jets had asked Josh Morrissey to become an alternate captain, and Josh Morrissey had accepted. You spoke to Josh Morrissey on Thursday ahead of the Rangers' debut, wrote about it for The Athletic, about his idea of him becoming growing into that leadership role. You asked him about it. What was his answer? What did you learn about his idea, his vision of being a leader with this team?
Yeah, I love the way that Josh handled it because, I mean, when you're a leader at any level, I mean, he's always been a leader in his junior teams. He's been involved in the leadership groups with Hockey Canada and those things. But for a young player to find their voice can be tough at the NHL level because there's probably a lot of times where you're biting your tongue because just the way the hierarchy works in terms of veteran players. Because Josh has been such an on-ice presence, but he's also a very smart, articulate person. I mean, he mentioned that one of those meetings with Paul Maurice where Paul said basically to him flat out that, hey, you have something to say, don't be afraid to share it. And that sort of was one of the first moments for Josh to know that. I mean, he's not getting up there and giving rah-rah speeches, but because of his understanding of the game and team dynamics and all of those things, he's a perfect fit for a leadership role, and I thought it was a smart time. It's very good timing, and not just because he signed the extension and that he's committed to the organization and the community, but it was time for Josh Morrissey to help officially in that leadership capacity. He's already been a leader in his quiet leader, lead by example type of play and the way he carries himself, but it was time for him to get a letter in his jersey, and he's one of those guys who will do a good job when it comes to the other part of the job, which is speaking to officials. I mean, he's a guy who knows his teammates well enough and is a big enough impact player that he checks those other boxes. But he's also got that ability to interact with the officials that you sort of need in that buffer between the coach and the men wearing the stripes.
Last one for you, Kenny. Kenny Wiebe joins us from New York. Can the Twins pull off the split this afternoon, game two against the Yankees?
Well, I think that they can. I'm not sure that they will. They've got one of the craziest postseason losing streaks going. A lot of that has to do with the fact that they go up against the evil empire. But it should be a fun one at the stadium. Stadium this afternoon/evening. And I'm going to say that the Yankees will go up 2-0 somewhat reluctantly here.
It'll just make the Twins' epic comeback all the more special after that
there
happens. Ken Wiebe joins us from New York. You know his work from theathletic.com. Ken, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much, buddy.
My pleasure, boys. Enjoy the rest of the show here.
Take care. When we come back, we will read out some of your responses to how you want to see the Jets make some roster changes. We'll also preview tomorrow evening's game against the New York Islanders. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
And the New York Islanders, with three straight goals late in the third period, will defeat the Winnipeg Jets by a score of 5-4.
That was back the last time the Jets and Islanders played, March 28th, 2019. The Jets had a commanding lead, not any longer.
Why did we have to bring up those bad memories?
Well, because it was the last time the Jets and the Islanders played. If they had played in a more recent game since then, they probably wouldn't have played that clip. But, c'est la vie. The Jets obviously dropping that game on home ice late in the season. Perhaps it was a harbinger of things to come. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Mignot. Nuke, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio Saturday morning. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
If it's Saturday, I'm wearing my Zappia Group rain jacket because it rains
every day
in Winnipeg now.
Every day.
Like, honestly, in the last 3 weeks, it's rained how many times? 12? 15?
Well, September was the rainiest September we've had in recorded history in Winnipeg. And
really?
October is certainly starting off along the same foot.
It's ridiculous.
I need rain over the alternative.
No, but like, Dave, I need to cut my grass and it keeps raining, so I can't cut the grass.
Guess what, Dave? When it's raining, it gets a little bit colder, turns to snow.
Good point.
I'm not sure if I'm a trained meteorologist, but there you go. Take that.
Thanks, Terry Apostle.
Yeah, you're very welcome. We asked people what sort of lineup changes they wanted to see after the first two games. Lots of feedback coming in via Twitter, at Illegal Curve, also via text. Send your text to 1290.90. Standard messaging rates do apply. A lot of people saying that they've seen enough of the Mark Letestu experiment. You want to see David Gustafson out on the ice, at least giving him a shot in the next couple of games. Same with Anthony Betetto. A lot of people saying they've seen enough of Betetto and that it's time to at least see Carl Dahlstrom, who, of course, the Jets picked up on waivers from the Blackhawks, or to the point that we made earlier in the show that they expect to see Sammy Niku back with the Jets, if not Tuesday. Well, certainly won't be tomorrow, because that would make three straight games for Niku, assuming he's playing tonight for the Moose in Texas. And if not Tuesday in Pittsburgh, then Thursday for the home opener against the Minnesota Wild. Keep your comments coming. A lot of great conversation happening both on our Twitter feed and on via text message. We sort of addressed it with Ken last segment, guys. Who's your starting goaltender tomorrow night as the Jets and the Islanders do battle on Long Island?
Yeah, I think it'll be Hellebuck. I don't know maybe if it's as much of a certainty as maybe it would have been based on how Helly played in the preseason and the first game. But, I mean, Hellebuck is still your number one goaltender. And, I would be lying if I didn't say I wasn't a little bit concerned with his play. And I'll say that because of the way he played more so in the preseason and towards the end of last year, right? And I'm not concerned about Hellebuck overall. I'm just saying I'm a little bit concerned about the recent sample size of Hellebuck. So I think he will play, and I think he's going to be all right. I think he probably would be better served, Dave, to play some less games this year, because if you look at how many games he's played over the last couple of years, including the playoffs, I think he might be either number one or number two.
Well, I think Freddie Anderson's probably number one on the Leafs, but you're probably pretty close to right.
But if you include the playoffs, right? Because he's played more playoff games, so I don't have that in front of me.
84 games, 2017-18, and then last year was 69 games.
Right.
So it's a lot of hockey.
The point is he's played a lot of hockey, and we talked about it actually quite a bit last year, and we haven't touched on it as much this year, but especially when you have an excellent backup like Brossoit, I think you could probably play Hellebuck, closer to 55 games? I mean, we don't have to necessarily pick an exact number, Drew, but the point is, Hellebuck is your number one goaltender, and you're going to be playing an Islanders team that obviously I think is going to be right in the mix for a playoff spot. And, with the exception of a couple of new faces, Derek Brassard being one of them, I mean, it's essentially the same Islanders team. They have the best coach in the league, in my opinion, in Barry Trotz. And, even though the goaltending might be a little bit of a step back from last year with Varlamov as opposed to Robin Lehner, I mean, it's still a really solid team. I mean, and we could sit here all day long, guys, and talk about whether or not we think the Islanders are going to be a playoff team or not, but I think at the very least we all agree that they're going to be in the mix for one of those last playoff spots in the East. I don't think anybody has the Islanders up there with, Tampa or Toronto as one of the elite teams, but you look at what they did in the playoffs last year, guys. I mean, they swept the Penguins. So, it's going to be another tough test. But back to your original question, I do think it's going to be Hellebuck, just simply because we expected it to be Hellebuck that was getting the majority of the start. So I don't think based on, one game, Maurice is going to go Brossoit back-to-back.
Dave, quickly, other lineup changes you're expecting for tomorrow night? Do you think Carl Dahlstrom gets a game, if tomorrow night or Tuesday, I guess, against the Penguins?
Well, the only issue is they're not practicing today. I think that, I'm trying to think if they've had a practice. They haven't been on the ice since he's joined them, because he joined them in New York. So he hasn't been on the ice with the team. So for his first time on ice would be at the morning skate. Now, I suspect it'll be a more intense morning skate because they're off today.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we'll get an indication as to that. But, I mean, it's hard to say whether Dahlstrom will be in. And, again, Nikku playing tonight. I don't expect that the Jets are going to recall him and play him tomorrow. There's always a possibility they call him up for the Tuesday game. But I'm more inclined to think that he'll most likely be back for the Jets home opener. But I'm with Ezra. I think it's going to be a hellebuck in net. I think that, you know, the idea that you've got to decrease his number of games for sure over the year, but I still think he's your number one starter. And the one thing I will add that I think is interesting is that, you know, the way he talks, you know, that's a big focus of people right now. When he was in the AHL, he never talked like this. It's really interesting. Like, it's almost like it's an NHL, I have to be the best. I have to, because when I talked to him at the AHL level in that first season back for the Moose, he wasn't like this. It's very interesting. He was a lot, and again, there was probably me. Like, no, seriously, it was probably just because there was one media person and the Moose media person. There wasn't a scrum of, you know, 10 people surrounding him with cameras, you know, a ton of cameras. So it's a different atmosphere, of course, and I acknowledge that. But it's just interesting that, you know, you come up to the NHL, and I understand this idea of having to show that you're infallible. But, you know, at the same time, I think Kenny's point was right, that you have to show your teammates that, you know, a little bit of ownership as well. You can't say I love my game. So I think if he removes that element, he'll be in a lot better of standing with everybody.
When we come back, we're going to be joined by Andrew Gross of Newsday Newspaper. He covers the Islanders. We'll get perspective from the team in Long Island ahead of tomorrow night's contest. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio, 1290. Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Andrew Gross. Andrew covers the New York Islanders for Newsday Newspaper. Andrew, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Great to talk to you guys again. Hope everyone had a great summer, and I know everyone's looking forward to the hockey season.
Absolutely, Andrew. The Isles opened up the hockey season last night, falling 2-1 on home ice to the Washington Capitals. You know, when I look at this Islanders forward group, Andrew, it's, you know, very similar to what you had last year. You bring in Derek Brassard to sort of a, you know, 1 year take a flyer on a veteran player. But, you know, 1 through 12, you know, they don't necessarily have dynamic offensive talent, but they have a very solid forward group 1 through 12.
No, and like you said, I mean, it's if you include Michael Dalcal, who came up late in the season last season, it's pretty much the exact same group. You insert Brassard for Valtteri Filppula, and away you go. You know what the hope is that Matthew Barzal is that dynamic offensive player, and that top line becomes that dynamic force with Anders Lee, you know, and he had 28 goals last season, 40 goals 2 seasons ago, and Jordan Eberle had 19 goals last season, but played a lot, you know, was much more consistent the last 7-10 games of the regular season and into the playoffs. So really, I agree, you know, that they stay the same. They don't have that John Tavares-like player anymore. But the hope is that Matthew Barzal kind of, you know, takes equal elements of his Rookie of the Year campaign when he had 85 points and last season when both he and Barry Trotz thought he played better because he was freelancing less and playing within a system more. And the hope is he puts those two elements together and really has kind of a breakout season this year. And also Jordan Eberle is, you know, much closer to 30, you know, maybe 32, 33 goals than he was to 19.
Andrew, the pride of Summerside PEI, Noah Dobson, he's obviously a top prospect in the Islander system. You wrote about him yesterday. He didn't play in the opener against the Washington Capitals. Is there a chance that we see him tomorrow against the Jets? And what are realistic expectations for a player like Dobson, who obviously had a great career in the QMJHL?
Yeah, no, he's going to play. They're not going to let him sit too long. He had a little bit of a, you know, tweak, soreness, tightness, whatever you want to call whatever unspecified thing he had. He left Tuesday's practice a little bit early. Practice the rest of the week just fine. But, you know, they're going to take it a little bit slow with him. And you know what? He had a very good training camp, and he certainly showed that, you know, he has a chance to play at this level right now. But the Islanders were also a little hamstrung by the rule that he was not AHL eligible, because in a perfect world, he's with Bridgeport in the AHL right now, and that's where probably the best spot for his development would be. That not being an option, the Islanders, you know, they didn't think his development would be further going back, you know, to junior hockey. They, you know, they were worried a little bit about him being overused down there and maybe falling into some bad habits, because he's a better player than that. But no, I mean, you know, Barry will not specify what quote unquote the plan is for him, but Barry certainly said that it includes playing. You know, and I don't see him sitting too long. Whether he plays against the Jets or not, you know, I'll probably have a better answer after I watch practice today here in about a half hour. See whether he's paired. You know, he'll probably rotate with Nick Leddy along with Johnny Boychuk, and then, you know, that's probably the decision, Dobson or Boychuk.
You know, Andrew, the Bridgeport Sound Tigers, the Islanders affiliate, are set to have their, I think, regular season debut today. They're playing their opener. But one player that won't be playing for them is 2014 first-rounder Josh Ho-Sang. I mean, this is such a curious situation. I mean, he's clearly been a bit of a malcontent, I guess you could say. Obviously not happy with the way the Islanders are treating him. Now he's requested a trade. How do you see this going with Josh Ho-Sang and the Islanders?
Well, I mean, I know Lou's trying to find a trade partner, but I kind of feel like, you know, he's knocking on the same doors that weren't opening probably, you know, through the trade deadline last season and around the draft this season. I don't think Lou's been able to find a suitable trade partner. You know, you're getting pennies on the dollar in any return for him at this point, probably. And, you know, it is curious. And, you know, I think Lou would argue that it's not Josh being a malcontent at this point. It's just, you know, I think Josh feels like he's shown the Islanders everything he can show at this point, and if they're not going to have him on the roster, that he just would like a chance with a different organization. Now, you know, he was an RFA this summer, and, you know, nothing obviously ever really comes of that in terms of movement. And obviously Lou wasn't able to move him. Where do I see this going? I see him probably, you know, in a week or so, probably reporting to Bridgeport and just trying to put some good stuff on tape and video. And, you know, as I wrote today, you know, the Islanders didn't have much scoring punch last night. And, you know, that is the one thing that Josh Ho-Sang brings. Now, he has to, the coaches have to be able to trust him defensively. And Josh said during training camp, you know, he doesn't go to bed dreaming of playing defense, but he is trying. And you could see it in training camp. He really is trying to be responsible within the system. But, right now, I think, you know, he just really wants to see if another organization will take a shot on him based on, you know, him maybe playing a little bit better in training camp.
Andrew Gross is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290, the Jets and the Islanders tomorrow evening. Andrew, you know, most people, I think, were very surprised that Robin Leonard couldn't get a deal done with the Islanders, and then all of a sudden Semyon Varlamov gets a four-year contract for the same amount of money that Leonard got a one-year deal in Chicago. Why is Leonard in Chicago and not New York this season? And, you know, was there more sort of to the negotiations between Leonard's camp and, say, Lou Lamoriello than might seem on paper?
Well, I think what it comes down to is something Robin acknowledged out at the awards show out in Las Vegas, in that, you know, because of his, you know, his story, you know, and his admission of dealing with some mental health issues and also some addiction issues, there's always, you know, teams are going to be a little wary of trusting him probably long term. You know, fair or not fair, it may be that Robin has to play much of his career on 1-2 year deals. Just because there might always be that doubt about, you know, him being able to maintain the changes in his life that, you know, he thankfully made. You know, it does, I agree, it does look weird, you know, on the surface that, you know, he gets 1 year $5 million, and I think he wound up, you know, asking Lou to think about a 2 year $10 million deal with the Islanders, and by the time he thought about it, you know, the way Robin says is Lou had moved on, you know. Samsonov, that was the Caps goalie last night.
Varlamov,
you know, gets 4 years at that same $5 million AAV that the Islanders were offering Leonard, and, you know, I think a lot of two factors go into that. One, I really think there's a belief on the Islanders' end that they sort of caught lightning in a bottle with Robin last season. Now, Robin will tell you that was just a foundation, and he can, you know, play back to the way he played last season. I think the Islanders had some, you know, concerns about whether Robin was going to maintain that kind of level. And also, there's a bigger picture in play in that, you know, Semyon Varlamov is, you know, tied into the Islanders' top goalie prospect, 23-year-old Russian Ilya Sorokin, whose KHL deal ends after this season. And I believe they share an agent or, you know, some kind of representation, or there is a tie there. And I think the Islanders, in a perfect world next season, sort of see Varlamov being a mentor to Sorokin and an enticement to Sorokin coming into the organization. So I think that's why you saw a little bit of that kind of generous contract that Semyon did receive.
Andrew, last question for you here. We're contractually obligated to ask you about Ryan Pulock, who's, of course, from Grandview, Manitoba. He had his big breakout offensive season last year, and, you know, he's playing 21, 22, 23 minutes on the back end. Do you think he gets enough recognition across the NHL for just how good of a defenseman he's developed into?
I you know, probably inner circles. I'm sure, you know, coaches and the scouts doing the pre-scouting work, I mean, he's a guy that, you know, they're circling. I think in that way, yeah, certainly he gets recognition. But, you know, he's not playing for the New York Rangers. He's playing for the New York Islanders. That's a little bit of, you know, less media attention in the New York area. And certainly I think around the league, you know, yeah, you probably – you know, the Islanders don't get a lot of national TV. So, yeah, you know, people probably are not appreciative enough of his skills and the way he developed last season. And, you know, I say that because, I mean, we all know what a spectacular defenseman Drew Doughty is. But, you know, here in the East, you almost never see a Los Angeles Kings game unless, you know, you have the package and you're staying up until, like, you know, 1:30 in the morning. So a lot of people on the East probably didn't have as great of appreciation of how great Drew Doughty was, you know, earlier in his career, and, you know, and maybe even up until a couple of seasons ago. So yeah, I certainly think if Drew Doughty can be overlooked by, you know, by a circle, certainly Ryan Pulock is probably not being, you know, seen, you know, for how good a defenseman he really is.
Andrew Gross covers the New York Islanders for Newsday Newspaper. He's also the host of Island Ice Podcast, available on the Newsday Newspaper website. Andrew, what can people expect from the podcast?
No, we just started Island Ice. I'm sorry, I didn't hear your question. We just started Island Ice, first episode posted, and it is now available on Apple Podcast as well. Coming to Spotify soon, and hopefully some other platforms as well. So, you know, please subscribe if you want to hear about the Islanders.
Well, Andrew, we always love having you on because we've had you on covering the Rangers, the Devils, and now the Islanders. So if you're going to cover a fourth team, then we'll still have you on to talk about that fourth team.
Well, I tell you what, when the Florida Panthers, like, you know, move to Eastern Long Island, I'll move over and do that as well. So.
There you go. Andrew Gross covers the New York Islanders for Newsday newspaper. Andrew, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Guys, have a great day. We'll talk soon.
We'll talk soon, likewise. When we come back, we do our Winnipeg Jets over-under for the 2019-20 season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
For Hanala, nice outlet pass right on the tape there for Ehlers. He'll chug to center and across the line. He'll move in, put it out in front of shot. They score! Blake Wheeler busts for the post. How about that move by Ehlers? It's on the tape and in. And just like that, 57 seconds into the second, we're tied at two.
From Thursday night at Madison Square Garden, Blake Wheeler scoring for the Winnipeg Jets. He might score more than, it's one of the questions coming up. Last season, he scored 20 goals. That was his lowest goal total. We'll talk about the Winnipeg Jets over-under.
Well, he's on pace for 82 right now. So.
Right, so that, you know, totally means he's going to get 82. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we were live here on TSN Radio 1290. Always a fun segment to do. We always do it at the start of the season. This is our Winnipeg Jets over-under for the 2019-20 season. We get started with an easy question for you two gentlemen. Dustin Byfuglien.
Don't we have some music to play underneath this segment?
I think Sean is going to play some music going underneath here in a couple seconds. Dustin Byfuglien will play over or under 0.5 games for the Winnipeg Jets this season.
Yeah, you have to start off with the hardest question. There we go.
Yeah.
Well, Alex, I think what I'm going to say here... Alex Trebek.
I understood your reference. I mean,
you're looking at me like...
I'm looking at you because you're supposed to be answering the question. I mean, succinctly.
At least I'm not eating mustard packets this week,
That's
Drew.
That's true. It's a step up. But, you know, this is supposed to be...
You know what? I'm going to say... Yeah, we have to go quick here.
Well, you don't have to go that quick, but a little succinct.
I'm going
to
say over, and I'm just an optimist, and I'm a glass half full type of guy, and even though...
Not you know, a beer glass half full.
Yeah, exactly. Even though it looks like there's a good chance that Buff isn't going to come back, we just don't know one way or the other. So I'm going to say over. I do think Buff is going to play a game this year.
David?
I agree. I think he's going to play over a game.
Wow. So you both have Dustin Byfuglien coming back to the Jets lineup. Over the past three seasons, Mark Scheifele has averaged 1.02 points per game played. Mark Scheifele will average over or under 1.04 points per game played this season. That would be 85.2 points if he was to play.
I almost
a full
want to say
season.
Even. Like,
you can't say even because he can't score 85.2 points.
No. I mean like his points per game. I think it's going to be so close to that.
Well, that's even is not an option. It's over or
wait,
under.
As a year, I'm usually the hedge guy.
Every season we have the same fight when we do this segment.
I'm not fighting.
We have you always say even. Even's not an option.
I'm going to say under.
Under.
But it's going to be slightly under. Like you look at Scheifele's career point totals 84, and then before that his previous high was 82, so I think he's going to be right around there, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's in the high 80s, so I'm going to say under, but I'll probably be wrong.
Okay, David?
I think he's going to be over. I think he's going to hit 90 points this season.
So a career high for Mark Scheifele. There you go. Blake Wheeler had a career high 71 assists last season, breaking his previous career high by 3 assists. This season, Blake Wheeler will have over or under 69.5 assists. I'll start with Dave.
Even.
I'm going to go under. I think he's going to end up in the 60 to 65 range.
I'm going to say under. I think he'll probably be closer to 65 than 60, but I mean, 71, I mean...
That was out of his mind.
That's ridiculous, even though, again, I wouldn't be shocked if Wheeler gets 70 to 75 of assists, but for the purpose of this, I'm going to say under.
More from Blake Wheeler. Last season, he scored 20 goals, his lowest goal-scoring total since the lockout-shortened season in 2012-13. This season, Blake Wheeler will score over or under 23.5 goals.
I think, well, since he's on pace for 82, it's a pretty safe bet to go over. I'm going to go over. I think I've got him pegged for around 25 goals this season.
Yeah, Dave, I'm going to say over too. You look at his goal totals, 3 years in a row, he had 26, right? And then before that, he had 28. So I think Wheels will probably be around, you know, 25 to 27 this year.
Last year, Brian Little scored 41 points, his lowest full season total since the 2009-10 season. This season, Brian Little will score over or under 40.5 points.
I'm going to go under because I suspect his role will be different this year, and I don't know that he'll have the offensive opportunities, so I'm going to go under for him.
Yeah, and obviously he's dealing with a concussion right now, so there's a big asterisk there, right? If he misses, you know, 10 to 15 games.
Well, I mean, injuries are always the asterisk associated with doing this kind of segment.
I'm going to say under. I think, yeah, I'm going to go under, even though I'm not confident in saying that, especially if he comes back soon. If he comes back soon, even if he's on the third line, I could see him being right around 40 to 45 points. But the reason why I'm probably going under is, as Dave said, reduced role, and he's dealing with an injury right now.
Last year, Josh Morrissey's highest time on ice in one game was when he played 29 minutes and 2 seconds on December 1st versus New Jersey, a game the Jets won in overtime. This year, will Josh Morrissey exceed that time on ice over or under 1.5 times?
Well, I can tell you, if Ezzy and I are both wrong about question one as to whether Dustin Bufflin comes back, I will absolutely say over because Josh Morrissey is going to be leaned on heavily. So I would not be shocked to see Josh Morrissey in the 30 range a couple of times this season.
Yeah, I'm going to go over. And even if Buff comes back, I could see Morrissey playing, you know, a couple of times, two or three times, maybe 31, 32 minutes. Mm-hmm. I don't think you want to see that too much because you're going to burn him out before the playoffs. So, yeah, I'm going to go over.
Question seven had to do with Dmitry Kulikov and scoring a goal, so I can scrap that question because obviously he scored last night for the Jets. So let's move on to Andrew Kopp. Last season, he set a career high in goals with 11 and was on pace to set a career high in points had it not been for an injury. This season, Andrew Kopp will score over or under 15.5 goals and over or under 37.5 points.
I'm going to go over on the goals. And I'm going to go over on the points as well. I could just see him touching that 40 mark. I mean, again, it's all opportunity, right? Which is, you know, kind of a given. It's same with the injury. But with, you know, him centering Laine and Connor, I mean, that's a lot of opportunity for points. So I'm going to go over for Andrew Kopp, given his current role.
Yeah, I'm going to say over. I kind of have Kopp pegged at 15 to 20 goals, 40 to 45 points.
Last season, Connor Hellebuck gave up 5 or more goals on 7 different occasions. This season, he will be the starting goaltender when the Jets give up 5 or more goals over or under 8.5 times.
Well, you know already that
he's done it once already. Yeah. He did it once.
I'm going to still say under. I think the Jets are going to get this slightly figured out. I don't think that, I mean, again, I think the fire wagon hockey is only good for October, November. I'm not saying that you can't have it all happen in the first 2 months, but I'm going to say, I mean, I probably think it probably happens 5 or 6 times, but I don't think it's going to happen over 8.5 times.
Yeah, Dave, I'll also go under on that one.
Nikolaj Ehlers' career high for points in the season is 64 points. This season, Nikolaj Ehlers will exceed his career high by over or under 5.5 points.
Over. I have Nikolaj Ehlers somewhere around 75 to 80 points. I think he's going to have a big year. And we saw that in game one, and he had 2 assists yesterday, right?
He had three and one. He went 3 assists in the first game and one yesterday.
Yeah, so he's already got 4 assists. And, I mean, he's going to score eventually here on this road trip. So I think so. I'm going to say over.
Dave?
Well, he's on pace for like 160 points. So, I mean, 164 points. So I suspect he'll go over for sure. I think that Nikolaj Ehlers is going to have a breakout season. That's why when there was the trade talk,
that didn't make any sense
and used to have us scratching our heads. I was just like, why would you trade a player who's that dynamic? So no, I think he is going to have an even bigger year for the Jets than he has in the past.
Last season, Kyle Connor scored 4 more goals than Patrick Laine in the same number of games. This season, Patrick Laine will exceed Kyle Connor's goal total by over or under 12.5 goals.
Why did you pick that number?
I don't know. I thought that, you know, you look at Patrick Laine, you look at Kyle Connor. If Connor gets 33 goals and Patrick Laine gets 46 goals, then it would be over.
I'm going to say under. I think there's a shot for 50 always with Patrick Laine, but I think he's going to be more around 40 to 45. And I have Connor probably around 35 as well, so I'm going to say under.
I'm going to say under as well. I've got Kyle Connor in the 40, like 35 to 40 goal mark, and I've got Laine in the 40 to 50
right
range. So yeah, I'm going to go under on that one.
That was a terrible question, Drew.
Last question.
You always have one that's terrible. That was the one.
Matthew Perreault set a career high in penalty minutes with 44, all of which were minor penalties. That's last season. His previous career high was 38 penalty minutes set on two different occasions. This year,
you really did some research for this one.
Matthew Perreault will have over or under 41.5 minor penalty minutes.
I'll go first. Under, but I think he's going to get into a fight. No, I'm just kidding. I'm going to say under.
Dave?
You know, now he's got a shaved head. He looks like a badass. Tough he looks end. Like he's going to tough. Yeah. He's going to beat people up, but I'm going to go under as well.
And there you have it. That's our Winnipeg Jets over-under for the 2019-20 season. We'll look back at our predictions later on in the year. But when we come back, Daniel Fink, the Manitoba Moose broadcaster, will join us to talk about the Moose game last night and their game tonight in Texas. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.